Aiming to build momentum on its speech technology efforts for the .NET platform, Microsoft used the annual Speech Tech International Exposition and Educational Conference as a platform to unwrap the Beta 2 release of the .NET Speech Software Development Kit, SDK, a technical review of the .NET Speech Platform, and a new Joint Development Program, or JDP. The SDK is a development tool based on the Speech Application Language Tags, or SALT for short, which defines a set of lightweight tags as extensions to common web-based programming languages, allowing developers to add speech functionality to existing web applications. The SDK is designed to integrate with the Visual Studio .NET development environment and will allow developers to write combined speech and visual web applications in a single code base. Microsoft unveiled the first beta of the .NET Speech SDK in May. The Beta 2 release adds enhancements to grammar and prompt creation, editing tools, and debugging tools for telephony and multimodal applications. The new features include W3C standard compatible formats and grammar authoring, a pre-built library of reusable speech telephony and application controls, and grammar libraries. To add to the momentum, Microsoft showed off a technical preview of the .NET Speech Platform, slated for release in the middle of 2003. The platform is the core speech recognition engine in Microsoft's strategy. Designed to support both telephones and multimodal-enabled devices like PCs, PDAs, and tablet PCs, the platform contains SALT interpreter software, SALT-enabled ASP.NET controls, a SALT-based voice browser, and a text-to-speech engine provided by strategic partner SpeechWorks. Finally, building on the speech-centric strategic relationship it has formed with SpeechWorks, Intervoice, and long-standing partner Intel, Microsoft unveiled the JDP, which aims to bring together enterprise customers and partners looking to build and deploy applications from the .NET Speech SDK on the .NET Speech platform. JDP participants will receive access to the .NET Speech platform technical preview, as well as real-world production environment-level testing. The long rise of internet use in Australia has come to an end, at least temporarily. More than 300,000 Australians stopped using the internet altogether in the June quarter this year, a survey by Melbourne-based Market Intelligence Strategy Centre has found. The internet boom has fueled the stellar rise of online stocks and made millionaires of computer programmers, until the tech correction more than 2 years ago, the report said. This latest survey is a further indication of how operating conditions continue to deteriorate for technology companies. Growth in internet use had occurred in all 10 quarters since December 1999, in some cases at rates of more than 20%. But the March quarter this year showed the slowest growth recorded, and that internet use fell for the first time in the 3 months to the end of June. The report said the final judgment on the internet's popularity would be passed after its use reached critical mass. More than 9.5 million Australians have access to internet technology. Although the boom may already have plateaued in Australia, the Market Intelligence Strategy Centre believes the fall in activity may be temporary. The research showed that internet use at home fell, but its use in the workplace rose by 2%. The survey also reported several factors may have influenced the index's fall, such as stricter rules applying to internet content. In the March quarter, for example, stricter rules on music copyright and downloads followed the cancellation of the free Napster platform. This had previously provided millions of users free music on the net. In Australia, the collapse of OneTel, a large internet provider, and increasing reports of internet crime are thought to have had a dampening effect. Difficulties associated with the rollout of digital broadband, which deprived users of the ability to experience high-speed technologies, may have frustrated worldwide web surfers. Another prolonged period of growth and use will be sparked only by new technology and advances in content, the centre says. Mobile telephone companies and other users of America's airwaves should have greater flexibility to employ the coveted spectrum for an array of services, a Federal Communications Commission task force recommended on Thursday. The task force, set up to help establish a national spectrum policy, also recommended that Spectrum users be able to adapt to new technologies and consumer demand, as well as lease to others airwaves they're not using. Airwaves for wireless services have become a hot and scarce commodity, with the explosion of mobile telephones, two-way messaging pages, and home computer and entertainment networks, and companies have had to compete with the government for access to additional spectrum. The growing importance of wireless spectrum in consumers' lives is becoming more evident, FCC Chairman Powell said after the task force presented its recommendations following a review of how the nation's airwaves are used. The task force also recommended the FCC clearly spell out the rights and responsibilities of spectrum users. A new Forrester research study indicates that less than a quarter of all European mobile phone users are likely to upgrade their handsets and subscriptions to next-generation services in the next 2 years. The report, Segmenting Europe's Mobile Consumers, found that 72% of European adults own handsets, some 190 million people, but that SMS is the only true non-voice service that consumers are willing to pay for today. Forrester discovered that only 24% of subscribers would be prepared to pay for any mobile application via their mobile phones, delivering a blow to European operators who've planned for new revenue streams from data. Figures relating to the ownership of WAP-enabled handsets back Forrester's forecast. Almost a quarter of all mobile phone users in circulation have WAP functionality, yet a mere 3% of mobile users actually take advantage of it. The research group advised operators to focus on two key groups that are likely to be early adopters of the new mobile services: young women that view their phones as a route to entertainment, and career-motivated high-income men that will use wireless email, MMS and IM to help them perform work-related tasks. The first group, according to Forrester, accounts for around 14% of the European marketplace, that's 27 million consumers, while the second comprises 15%, about 29 million consumers. Operators are becoming increasingly desperate to generate revenues from 2.5 and 3G services to balance out the massive amount of capital invested in next-generation infrastructure. The Electronic Privacy Information Centre, or EPIC, is launching a counter-offensive against Hollywood's efforts to crack down on student file swapping. The privacy advocacy group is sending letters to presidents of colleges across the USA, asking them to think before they install monitoring tools on university networks. Monitoring the contents of communications is fundamentally incompatible with the mission of educational institutions to foster critical thinking and exploration, EPIC wrote. Monitoring chills behavior and can squelch activity that should thrive in educational settings. EPIC's efforts come in response to attempts by the entertainment industry to pressure colleges to curtail file swapping. Last month, the Recording Industry Association of America, or the RIAA, and the Motion Picture Association of America, the MPAA, sent letters to more than 2,000 colleges warning them that students were using school networks to trade illegal file copies. Although the letter didn't overtly threaten legal action, it did ask the schools to make a substantial effort to stop such trading. The entertainment industry has trained its guns on universities because they offer high-speed connections to obtain quickly and offer files of all types. Amazon.com will begin selling clothes, shoes, and accessories online at a new store on its website featuring more than 400 brands, the internet's top retailer said on Thursday. The new online apparel store, which actually began with a preliminary test site a week ago, is the second major store launch for Amazon this year after it started an office product store with Office Depot in September. The new addition to Amazon's mall of stores that sells products ranging from books, music, videos, and kitchenware to electronics had been in the works for a year. Analysts said the new store filled a key hole in Amazon's storefront lineup, and its debut comes at a good time, with apparel now the third most popular online sales category. Amazon, which first started selling books in 1995 and has steadily expanded its offerings, is gearing up for the upcoming holiday season, a critical time of the year for the web retailer. At the same time, the new sales channel gives clothing retailers, many of whom already operate their own web stores, a new way to sell their goods at a time when they're struggling with the slow economy and smaller advertising budgets. To encourage customers to spend money at the site, Amazon said it will give out a $30 promotional certificate to those who spend $50 or more at the new store. BizRate.com reports that U.S. consumers spent $4.3 billion online in October 2002. That's up 39% from October 2001. BizRate also notes that the number of online purchases jumped 40% over the year to 29.9 million in October 2002. The average amount spent online per consumer stayed relatively flat, however, at $145. BizRate estimates, therefore, that Q4 2002 B2C e-commerce should reach roughly $16.82 billion, with about $8 billion spent between the 25th of November and the 25th of December. The UK is still languishing behind other European countries when it comes to broadband internet access, a study has found. According to a European consumer survey by analyst firm Jupiter Research, the UK has just 7% of internet users connected to broadband, compared to 11% in France, 17% in Spain, and 29% in Sweden. Both Germany and Italy have 8% of net users converted to high-speed connections. The UK does have a higher proportion of overall net users than some of its neighbours, but the figures still reflect the slow start Britain has made in going high speed. The majority of existing internet users have stated that they are unlikely to upgrade to broadband. Both houses of the South Australian Parliament have passed an internet censorship bill, with both the Labor and Liberal parties voting in favour. The Democrats voted against the bill, which is set to become law soon. Among other things, the bill makes it a criminal offence to make available content unsuitable for children online, even if the content is only made available to adults. Thus, even if content which is rated R is put up on a password-protected region of a site, and the password is provided only to adults, one could still be prosecuted under criminal law. The maximum penalty is $10,000. The bill covers content placed on the web, including archived mailing lists and messages to news groups. A practically identical bill was introduced in South Australia in November 2000, but wasn't passed by either House of Parliament in February 2002, just before the last elections were held in the state. And across the Tasman, New Zealanders are leading the world in internet use, an international survey shows. The G2002 survey of 31 countries found that 71% of New Zealanders had used the internet in the past month. That was the highest percentage of the countries surveyed, which included Australia, Britain, and the United States. The Virginia Supreme Court ruled against America Online and its efforts to protect the identity of one of its 35 million subscribers by asking the court to quash a subpoena calling for the member's name in an issue that goes to the heart of the anonymity of the internet. The ruling against the world's largest internet service provider was the latest in the evolution of privacy laws as they pertain to the internet and identities of web surfers, privacy experts said. The Virginia Supreme Court sided with a lower California court's ruling that supported Namtay Electronics' request to subpoena the identity of an AOL user as part of a complaint that alleged libel, trade libel, and violations of California's unfair business practice statute. The electronics company alleged in its complaint, filed in January of 2001 in California, that 51 unknown individuals, including an AOL subscriber, posted false, defamatory, and otherwise unlawful messages about the company's stock on an internet message board. In April 2001, AOL filed a motion to quash Namtay's subpoena, arguing it should not be required to reveal subscriber information because it would infringe on the well-established First Amendment right to speak anonymously. AOL, the internet arm of media giant AOL Time Warner, also argued that Namtay could not meet the heightened scrutiny required to overcome that right, but the lower California court denied AOL's motion. Now the Virginia higher court has agreed. And finally, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology is adding to its online offerings an electronic library for the already vast and mounting catalogue of scholarly materials born in digital form. The digital library, called DSpace, initially will be managed by the Federation of 8 universities, including MIT. It will be available on the World Wide Web and enable data to be stored not just in text, but in video and other formats too. The system runs on open-source software that was developed in conjunction with Hewlett-Packard. That means other institutions can use or adapt the program royalty-free to create digital libraries of their own that could easily be linked to the DSpace consortium. And that's News Briefs for this week.